Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, we have, as per grudgingly usual, Jack Piattelli. Jack, how we doing?
Doing real good. Real good today.
I don't like that tone at all. No. I don't like that at all.
Well, I got a trivia question for you today.
Oh, my God. Right? Okay.
I got a trivia. So we're going to talk about some players, high school players.
Yep.
And do you know who the first New England-born USA lacrosse player is? Born in New England. I'll give you a hint. Born in Massachusetts. He went to UNH, played on the 1982 World Team.
That's not Mike Murphy, is it?
Nope.
No. John Fay?
Yes!
Hey! Hey! Yeah, you got him! Yeah! Woo! What a pull by me! How you like that?
John Fay.
You thought I was never going to get that. Two guesses.
Do you know what high school he played at?
No idea.
Concord Carlisle.
Oh.
And he played at UNH. Great player. Yeah, broke the ice for Massachusetts.
Yeah, excellent. I actually know when I coached at Emerson, Mike Blanchard used to talk about him all the time. And the thing that he would try to teach the kids to do is how to carry his stick, because John Fay had legendary stick protection. And he told Mike to tell the kids that it was carrying the stick lightly helped him get all the control that he needed. So not to grip so tightly when you're cradling, when you're going through your motions, to kind of just have it be like lithe and balanced every time you're trying to do something. So I don't know if that worked, but he tried. That's one of the things that we got from John Fay.
Yeah, tremendous athlete, competitor, great stick skills. I had the opportunity to play with John with the Boston Blazers for 2 years. And my job was with the Blazers was I warmed him up before every game. And I would bring a banana to the warm-up because he always would eat a banana before each game. So if he played well, I warmed him up well. That was my job.
All right.
Take that credit. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like Wade Boggs and chicken, but with a banana, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he listens to our show, too. So a shout out to John Fay.
Oh, hey, John Fay. Thanks for listening. Also, I want to thank our guest who's here, Varian head coach, Jacob Morris. What's up, man?
Thanks for having me.
Hey, in studio.
In person. Yeah, in studio.
Yeah.
Big moves.
We try to get as many people in studio as we can. We are doing a feature on Zavarian, so you're getting a full face full of Zavarian the next couple of weeks. But super glad you could come in and join us here. And we're going to talk a little bit about your program, your history as a coach, and kind of where you cut your teeth, which I don't know if you want to get into that right away.
Well, yeah, you'll have to deal with the news blitz, but they're actually happy with me. Height of admissions, acceptance season. Timing's pretty good on this one, so
nice.
I might survive one more year.
Nice. It'll go out there, and everyone will be happy. You also do work with Laxachusetts as well.
Yep, that's right. Laxachusetts and our parent company, the NLF, which is a whole new barrel of laughs that's been the last couple of years, but it's been going really well. That's been great for guys from the area. The results speak for themselves. Tops in guys going Division One, tops going guys in NESCAC. So it's worked out. The plan has been good. It's been nice to see it kind of take off.
What age group do you coach with them?
So with Laxachusetts, we hand our guys up. So Sean Morris and I do the guys who are going into the recruiting window, so that the rising juniors, which is a lot of fun. That's the pressure year. But that's when, you know, the guys are pretty locked in, trying to really make sure they put the right foot forward and you get to see the right guys on the sidelines. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I will say the NLF tournament has been very well run the last couple of years, and not only the competition, whether you're in Double A or Single A, the teams are very good, and a lot of college coaches in attendance, and it's really like you said, it's a great event, not only for the Laxachusetts kids, but a number of the other programs from New England that go and play in the NLF. It's very well run, and we get a lot of very positive feedback from the results.
It's one of those ones where you look at your turning machine the morning of, and you're like, why do I even bother? Everyone's good.
Yeah.
There's no cupcake game.
That's right.
Whatever three names you see, they're going to be dogfights.
Yeah, it's great.
But it's good.
Yeah, I mean, even moving that tournament to Lehigh has been interesting. And not for me, because I can't go. But it's a little too far away. But I remember seeing it when it was at UMass many years, even when I was coaching. I got asked to coach a random team there 1 year because they were out of coaches. Oh,
there you go.
And it was a wild experience. But yeah, definitely top-tier talent playing in that every single year. The Rising Juniors Showcase, I thought, was really good, too, a couple years ago and this past year. Let's talk a little bit about your origins getting into coaching, right? So we found out you played at CM pre-show. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I went to high school at CM. We don't talk about too often around the program very much. but
rivals in the Catholic
League. Yeah, lots of good-natured rivalry in that conference for anyone who's played in it knows. Yep, so played there. Ended up going to Hartwick College afterwards. Played for Bill Bajornis out there. Wanted to have a chance to play a lot and have a good time. Mission successful. Played 1 year in grad school across the pond for the University of Leicester and came home and had the itch and didn't want to give it up quite yet. And through sheer dumb luck, Medfield had two openings for assistants, and somehow in that meeting, I guess I fooled John Isaf into I could do this a little bit. And that was 2013, and we were off and running, did 8 years there, and probably the best experience coaching-wise, learning how to win.
Yeah, and we've had Coach Ice on the pod. Very, very intense in a way that, like, is very subtle in person, not so subtle outside of person, as we discussed a little bit before. I'm gonna cop to this now. I don't care. People make mistakes. I actually posted on Lax Journal the incorrect times for the Massachusetts State Championships, and I'd already realized it within the second that I did it, and I was like, oh, I'm in the post fixing it, and who texts me? It's been up for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. It's already getting fixed. Coach Ice, what are you doing? You got to fix it. It's wrong. And I was like, I'm. It's fixed already. I'm in the post. No response. I'm like, okay. Now Coach Ice doesn't like me. But, you know, I think that kind of intensity, right? Like, I know you, JD, who works at Maverick now, you guys both worked under him. And when he told us that it was you two, there was assistance. I went, because I kind of know both of you a little bit. I went, wait, how did that work?
Yeah, if his hair wasn't gray already, it would have been after the first year with us together, I'm sure.
100%. And I think that I say that not in a pejorative way. I feel like you have a certain energy and a certain candor that a lot of coaches don't have. And I find it refreshing. I like talking to you about anything because, you know, as long as I don't say it's Dackett. I can kind of say I talked to a coach and he said this, which is great. No, that's good. That's good. That's trust, right? That's trust.
Appreciate that.
I'm not saying that's him every time I say something, but sometimes it is. And you're very honest with everything.
You know, my burner account?
No, I'm not a burner account. I don't have one. I wish I did. I wish we talked about this, that if I made one, people would know who it was immediately. Yeah, just because I would say things. Actually, people ask me if I'm behind burner accounts all the time. It's so weird. I'm like, no, I don't have to do that. I have mine. I'm like a walking burner account with just too many followers. That's how it works.
Who has time?
No. Well, not anymore. And I know you don't have time anymore.
I have no time.
You've recently kind of switched jobs while you've been the head coach at Xaverian. Can you kind of talk about how that has gone through and the process of that? And try. I mean, one of the things, you coach in the Catholic League. And the Catholic League is, I mean, it's different than a lot of other Division I schools in Massachusetts. Right? I mean,
that's true.
You're bringing kids in. You have an admissions thing. It's basically a prep school. So we don't say that. I know we don't say that. But it is. There's an admission standard that a kid has to meet before they get in. So it's technically not. You don't get born.
Yeah, it's not a town team.
Right. It's not a town team. So how has that process been for you and kind of navigating that from Medfield, which is not like that?
Yeah, I don't know what's in the water at Medfield, but 40 kids show up and they're all good, so that was easy. A little bit more involved, obviously, on this side of things. So we really, the normal, like the open house night, stuff like that, so you get to add those to your calendar, and it's a great way to meet the kids, and kind of, once they visit, you can kind of get into it a little bit. We don't reach out proactively. That'd be against MIA rules, and we absolutely play by the rules. It's easy enough to do it. There's still plenty of athletes out there, and Xaverian's an awesome school, so we waitlist in every grade again, I think, which has been the case since. So it's almost, the problem is there's too many kids sometimes where someone might come late and be a good player. And you're like, oh, man, we got like 50 kids on the waitlist in front of you. Like, I'd love to, but it doesn't work that way.
Right.
But it's a school first, as it should be. And the overall goal, of course, is to send them to college. So right. If it does take a certain type of kid, they're not going to bend the rules because a kid can run a 4-4.
Right.
Those days you kind of wish they would, but overall, they do it right, and our admissions guys are great. So very lucky, very spoiled. They make it kind of straightforward for us, at least.
Now, you started accepting 7th and 8th graders, was it 2 years ago?
I think it's a little more, maybe five, six.
That many years ago now, huh? So you offer lacrosse for the 7th and 8th graders as well?
Yep, we have two teams. We've run it like a town team, no cut. We want to let them play for as long as they can.
Sure.
Or and some of those kids are just picking it up.
Yeah, because you don't know what you have in the seventh grade. Idea. They could be really good or they could be really bad, but they could be really good in high school and not turn out as good as you thought they might, right? Nope. So you got to give them all a stick and see where it goes.
Some of the best guys I've coached either picked up the game in eighth grade or changed positions. Robert Treber was a goalie for me back at Medfield, went to Tufts.
Yeah.
He was an attackman until eighth grade, switched to, ended up being an All-American, ended up at Tufts, worked out pretty good for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we were cutting kids,
right,
that kid's probably getting cut.
Right, right.
So running it like the town mall is the best way to do it.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things about Massachusetts across the board, especially in Division I, is eighth graders can play high school games, which, like, I'm from New Hampshire. I'd be like, wait a minute. We can get eighth graders? Really? Like, I don't think we're allowed to do that, but if we were, I would literally, like, I coach at a school that is also the middle school. I would literally be in the halls with, like, flyer sign-ups like this after every break. Like, please come play lacrosse. Are you in eighth grade? Seventh grade? Next year. Like, I feel like that helps.
Kids on the way by. You're 5'11". You might be able to hang.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, if they're taller than me, they can play. It's fine.
Yeah, I think it's for us, I think it would take a really special kid. And not just athletically, socially. You can't drop a 14-year-old necessarily into a locker room with the Catholic Conference. Some of them are 19 by the time they're graduating.
Right.
Repeating is so common now. So really, you'd almost worry more about that than the skill. I mean, they'll be there a year later. You still get 4 years out of them. It would really take a spike. It would have to be a total waste of that kid's time. Or he'd have to be so dominant physically where you couldn't put him on the field with eighth graders to move him up. That's kind of how we look at it.
Bill Ricca had a kid in eighth grade who was, he's just slinging. He scored a goal in the championship game at D2. And I was just like, what? So I'm looking at the list, out. Like...
Tiny little guy, too. I was at the game.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's not always physical, but it probably would be in your case. And one of the things that I think kind of separates a Division I in Massachusetts is the actual, like, full athleticism. And I think one of the guys that you've added to your roster for the coming season that is the personification of that is Henry Hasselbeck.
Yeah, that was a good pickup for us. Athletically, he flies. He was the fastest kid on the football team, I think. There was one play where he ended up dumping a ball off short to the running back, this kid Mike Oates, who can fly. And then somehow caught him and ended up in front of him and threw a block, like, 40 yards downfield. Like, oh, that's Maryland speed. That's the Division I speed right there.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have because, you know, BC High and Prep certainly have it all over the field. You got to have it, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely going to help your transition. I watched him play for 3D New England, I think. God, it had to be last summer. I think it was at the Babson tournament, the tournament at Babson. And I was like, who's that? And someone was like, oh, that's Hasselbeck. And I was like, that Hasselbeck? And they're like, yeah. And then the next play, the ball was on the ground. And I looked down at my book and I looked up and he had carried the ball in like 2 seconds from the restraining line to the other restraining line. And he was still running. And I was like, what? What happened? Like, it seems like he's one of those guys. He has a lane. He's hitting the lane. He's bringing the ball up. And you can see, like, when you have that kind of end-to-end speed, why, you know, Tillman would recruit him.
Solve some problems, that's for sure. Clearing the ball. I mean, it makes you look smart. You can just give it to that kid. And why don't you just run it out for me?
Especially at the college level, the shot clock, right? You only get 20 seconds to get it over midfield. So you got a guy that can motor. It's certainly going to help. But if you get the ball over in 10 seconds, you get 70 seconds to shoot on the goal. The quicker you get it over, it's an advantage for the offense.
That's a good point. How do you think?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. How do you think you're going to use him?
Well, we're going to shovel as much onto his plays as he can handle. The great thing about him is he's worked on every other part of his game. He's not just a fast kid who holds a stick like a hammer and can't do anything else with it. I've seen him shooting on the field. He can put the ball where he wants to, and obviously 3D does such a phenomenal job coaching those guys up where he knows what he's looking at. He knows where the ball should go. It's our job to kind of find some ways to put that speed in places where he can use it other than just clearing the ball. I mean, I certainly don't want him to just run down the field, dump and run off. He's not that guy.
Right.
Well, so I'm sure he'll create a number of double teams once he gets a step on his guy, or maybe triple teams, and open up the other side of the field. I mean, that always looking for a little more space and time for the other players on the field.
Yeah, I think those Catholic League defenses is funny. Like they don't go out that far to play guys because they know that if they go out too far, they're going to get burned by half the guys that are on the field. Like the athleticism in that league is so, especially at those positions where you're attacking with the offensive players, is so elite. In terms of the top, like, 3-4 programs, that, like, if you have a bad match, that's a goal. Like, I've seen it happen multiple times. I mean, if you watch any of the state title games, especially the last 2 years, BC High and St. John's Prep, it's not a one-on-one duel so much as it's, we want to get this guy against this guy. How do we make that happen? How do we move the ball this way? How do we get the matchup we like? Is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, I mean, especially both those defenses are so well coached that you need to find that way to have a sudden change and win quick and make hopefully two people react when it should be one. Because if you're going slow and just kind of nibbling around the outside, they're not going to. I mean, even back when Steve Lydon was coaching BC High and they had Will Bowen and Tommy Joyce, they wouldn't chase out unless they wanted to, unless they had a guy like, oh, we're going to take the ball off this kid all day. But for the most part, it was, all right, we're going to make you come to us, and then we're going to take it from you, and it's going to hurt, and you're not going to want to do it again.
Right.
And they still play the same way. Prep runs a college defense. They have multiple slides set up depending on where you dodge. You can hear them communicating, so it's not easy. And they're not going to chase you for no reason because, like you said, the speed's there for certain guys, and then you're in trouble for why.
What's your experience been kind of developing Zverin into a team that can compete with those two teams, especially in the last couple of years? Is it a lot of stuff that you do in practice, or is it a lot of matchup play and style of play for you?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting question. And, you know, Zverin always, like, the cupboard wasn't bare. Tim Gardner ran an awesome program. And the only thing that made it kind of a restart was the COVID year where we had a gigantic senior class leave and ended up with, I think, three guys with varsity experience by the time we were back, which is the only reason we felt like, oh, my God, we're rebuilding here. What happened? A bunch of your guys, unfortunately, didn't get to coach. The Alexanders, that's the biggest regret of my coaching career, I think, missing that year with those guys.
I mean,
they were outstanding.
Not only outstanding players, but just great young men. Great young men.
And leadership-wise, that was you lose all that. Now you have seniors who've never been the guy.
Right.
So that was tough. But
sorry to interrupt, but that's got to be, I mean, we talk about how COVID has affected so many different players, but that senior class, and to your point, not having the opportunity to coach those players and losing a class like that is massive to a program.
Yeah, and we heard it or felt it leadership-wise especially, because now you got a sophomore who's now a senior who was like a third-line guy.
Right.
Now he's going to be the guy and a captain. He has no experience doing that. So that was the hardest part.
And he had no one to learn from.
Exactly. Because we were locked down, and then we had the kind of weird fall where guys couldn't really play. So we're actually just coming out of that, we feel like, finally, where this junior class, a lot of them played as freshmen. So they kind of know what it takes to compete with a St. John's Prep or BCI. You've been punched in the mouth enough times.
Right.
Where you know kind of how you have to come correct and how you need to practice. And so, yeah, which is where we try and do most of it is in practice.
Right.
And it's the way you play more than the matchups.
Right. So in that vein, like, what is your preferred style of how do you want to coach offense and how you want to coach defense?
Yeah, we've played a lot of zone against BC the past couple of years because they were so athletic at the midfield, especially my first season. We prefer to be man-to-man. And kind of like those two teams play, you're going to have to come to us until we get you in an area and we're sliding to take the ball away rather than sliding to panic and help somebody. It's easy to say and draw up. It's not always easy to execute. You got Ayers coming around the pipe with the ball on his stick. That's kind of a tough double team to stick every time. And then we just want to play fast offensively. We grade our guys on decisions rather than the results. So if we run by a guy and we make the right two passes and someone drops it, you're not going to hear about it on the sideline. You'll hear, go do that again, play fast, fine. And we're lucky that we have a good face-off guy and we're strong in nets, so we can kind of get away with that, where you don't have to take the air out of the ball.
How do you think teams perceive you coming into this season now? You have a ton of junior commits. It's actually what the cover story is that I'm working on. You have six rising junior commits for D1 in this class. Do you think that's like a lot of extra pressure?
Well, if it is, they better embrace it, because we're not giving any of those commitments back, that's for sure. And we have some good guys in the senior class. Our goalie's a third-year starter. Will Pasinelli's going to BU as a midfielder.
Right.
Dylan Benoit's going to Assumption, Division II. There's a saying that I now have learned to hate, which is, you know, when you're okay at something, you tell people how good you are. When you're actually good at something, people tell you. People have been telling me we have a wagon for, like, 3 months now. I hate that phrase now. I absolutely hate it because we haven't picked up a single ground ball. We haven't had one practice. Who knows what it's going to look like?
Right.
We might stink.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope not, but it's got to come together. These guys have to gel. That's just pen to paper right now, especially in our league. And I know Prep and PCR aren't too concerned. They're 1-2 as they always are.
Yeah.
We're still chasing.
Commits are an individual thing. They're not a team thing. You can't even have any success if the players are thinking about, I'm a committed Division I player. I mean, I've been in situations where we're playing against teams that have 20 Division I commits, and we'll beat them because we're a better team. It's about being a team, right? Coming together as a team. You have the talent on paper, but like you said, Coach, you may stink. Hopefully you don't. I mean, you get everything on paper, but they got to compete together as a team and be good teammates. And, you know, what's the goal here? To win the state championship.
Right.
Put your egos aside. Put your commitments aside. Those don't mean anything. I mean, and they don't mean anything when you get to school either.
And they're partially projection. I mean, we don't put them on scouting reports for a reason. Like, oh, this kid's committed to UNC. Well, he's not there yet. He's not on the team.
Right.
So he's still a high school kid. Let's not overthink it here.
I think it's different for the kids, though, because, yep. I mean, we...
And the parents.
And the parents. But, like, for the kids, last year we at Hogbetson, we played an opening season jamboree. None of the games counted. Just kind of tune-up. And we're playing against Division I team in New Hampshire. And the kids know who's committed on the roster. I'm like, how do you know that?
They don't know each other now. They don't, it's crazy.
It's New Hampshire and it's small. The reason I say how do you know that is that this isn't a team that's plugged into the internet, man. I'm coaching in the sticks. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I'm impressed that they, like, know what Instagram is at certain points. They're like, Coach, that guy was committed. I'm like, I don't. Stop talking. We're on the sideline. I'm like, stop talking about that.
Middle of the game here.
Middle of the game. And we lost 6-2 to the team. We only played like one half. And the kids were like, oh, we did pretty good. Those are a committed team. I'm like, you lost.
Lost by four.
Stop. Like, stop talking about that. You know what I mean? I'm like, are you guys all committed? And they're like, no, Coach. And I'm like, then yeah, we did good. But like, we can't just like be in awe of people we play against. And I think, like, obviously my team's a kind of an exception to that rule because, like, a lot of people aren't in awe of things. But individually, being like, oh, playing against this kid, he's committed to Princeton or something, that still, like, holds weight no matter what level you're at the high school level. Do you get that at all? Like,
it can be a big confidence builder for guys if you own that matchup and...
100%.
This kid's going there.
So you went glass half full.
Yeah. I don't normally do that. Jeez, my players be shocked to hear that. Because normally I'm the guy like, what, you want his autograph? Shut up. I don't care where he's going.
100%.
But I've seen it with guys who've played even a great first quarter against someone who's, you know, kind of a headliner. And all you say to them in between quarters is like, dude, you're crushing them. Keep it up. And so you can see them kind of. Sure. You know, the shoulders come up a little bit. They're still high school kids. They need the confidence.
That's why they play the games, right?
Yeah.
You show up at a game and, oh, they got 20 commits. Oh, we probably shouldn't play this game. Let's go home.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not where you play. It's not where you're going to play. It's how you play.
Yeah. That day.
Every day. Every day. Yeah. Every day. Every single day in practice, mm-hmm. in games. When you go to college, there's 45 guys just as good as you. You got to find a way to get on the field.
Yeah, and there's 20 more coming next year, too.
And you've got the same situation as Severian. The one thing that I've been around in this area for a long time, but the Catholic schools, I mean, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, no one talked about PCI, Severian, St. John's, CM. Now they've all got great programs. More and more kids are playing. More and more parents want better education for their kids. So let's see, the Catholic school, ISL, and obviously the public school teams have gotten better, too, because there's just more players playing. So it's becoming more challenging for the better players to get maybe the time that they think they're supposed to have because they think they're better.
And they're paying for it. So they're a customer. So there you go. There's that whole extra angle.
Yep, you're absolutely right. That's a great point.
How do you feel about that? You're basically working for kind of, not to put it this way, but you're working for two places that, you know, you need to pay to basically play at or be involved with. But you came from a place where the culture is so strong in midfield that, like, it's like they grow lacrosse players there. What was your adjustment like from that? Because I keep coming back to that because I know it's like such a point of emphasis.
I flipped the switch in my brain, I think, the day I took the job where I was like, okay, we got to think this other direction now.
Right.
One of the reasons I love Lacrosse is Dan Chouinard, you know, Dave Evans and Sean Morris have kept it as cost-effective as they can, and I know there's guys that have been scholarshiped and helped, and those guys all have day jobs. Some of the guys we work with from around the country are like, you guys are nuts. Why don't you just add three more teams, and you can, looking at Dan, you don't have to be a firefighter anymore. And he's like, no, I'd rather keep the price point where people can afford to do this, because not every kid is a trust fund kid. I love the gritty town guys. It's my favorite ones.
No question.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's a variant. It's just, thankfully, we're not charging like 80, so it's still... Right. A somewhat reasonable number. It's not like $8,000 like when I went to CM, unfortunately. But we kind of don't think about it in a lot of ways.
Right.
And once they're in the building, those are the guys you got. So right. Not just, a great answer, but.
No, I mean, I kind of get what you're saying, but it's do you.
If you're asking, you
feel
know,
differently about it is actually what I'm getting at. I'm kind of clawing at that. Like, do you feel differently about it?
Yeah, a little bit. And it's such a weird setup. And we're not the only state, but where you're playing with towns and against towns. And it has, like you said, to your point, it hasn't been a big issue until recently because who was winning all the championships? Towns. So if this bubble we're in now continues, I mean, who knows? And we're not the only sport where, you know, that's a discussion. We saw some of the hockey scores yesterday. It was 11-0 win. We won 9-1. Maybe that's getting rid of the Super 8, but it's also two towns playing two private schools.
I mean, it's like that where I'm from. I mean, BG, yeah, listen, BG beats everybody. Derryfield gets the championship game. They're building at St. Tom. I mean, luckily in Division III, there isn't anybody that's that good at that level.
What's happening is back in the day, your best lacrosse players played within those great programs.
Right.
Hingham, Sudbury, Cocker Carlisle, and they continue to. Right? You probably don't lose as many kids, and now Franklin and Medfield probably don't lose that many kids from those programs.
Right.
Now, the other programs that pop up, let's say a King Philip or a Reading, well, they're a great program now too, not a good example. The better players from the weak public high schools are going to the Catholic schools because they can afford it. And maybe there's some of them are going to the ISL schools. So the weaker public high schools are getting weaker because all their better players are going to Catholic schools or private schools or prep schools in New England.
Right.
And I agree with you. I think they're going to have to do something because it's not fair. I don't think it's fair for the kids who go to the private schools to play against the public schools or the public schools to play against the private schools. And some kind of a playoff? I don't know what the answer is, but
I'm with you. I don't know what the answer is. Someone smarter than me has got to figure it out. I mean,
right.
And we'll see if this bubble continues. Because if it goes right back where it's, all right, Lincoln Sudbury's clearly the best team. They've won, what was it, 4 out of 6? Or,
but I don't see it going that way. I don't at all. I mean, because the game continues to grow. I mean, you've got kids starting in kindergarten now, learn to play. And seeing all the success of New England players going off to Tufts and Assumption and St. Lawrence and getting a great education. And it's opening, lacrosse is opening doors for so many players. It's the ticket to get into a good school. It's an opportunity. Sure. It's an opportunity for players to go to school that they normally wouldn't be able to get into if it wasn't for lacrosse. Yeah. And you can't say that about hockey or basketball, maybe football. But you look at all the Division I lacrosse players for Massachusetts, all the Division I football players, basketball,
sure,
and hockey. The numbers have to be greater with lacrosse players today. So there's even at great schools, NESCAC. I mean, most New England kids are going to NESCAC schools. A number of them are going to Ivy League schools, and they're going to the BUs, and now they're going to the Merrimacks. They're all getting great educations. And now lacrosse, all these different programs popping up, that's the answer.
Yeah, but that kid who just is learning to play and is good doesn't automatically mean their parents have enough money to send them to all these things.
No, it doesn't, right? But Catholic school is a lot less than prep schools. Prep schools are $65,000 a year.
Right.
That's crazy money. I mean, that's more than some colleges. So I think the value is great value at the Catholic schools in terms of tuition, education, athletics.
There's a lot to say for it, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certain kids, like, I needed all boys with structure. I mean, I was an eighth grader in Needham. I was a lunatic, wild man. They didn't even know what to do with me.
Yeah.
Show up to CM the first week.
You're still a wild man.
A little bit. Show up to CM the first week, get cuffed on the back of the head by one of the brothers. I'm like, oh, I better button my top button here. These guys aren't messing around.
Yeah.
So there's something we said for that, too, which is the other side of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hear that a lot, where, like, we really want this for our son. He needs some more structure.
Absolutely.
Fewer distractions. Like, well,
yeah. The preps do that, too.
I mean, oh, yeah.
If I didn't PG, I would have not made it through college. If I didn't know what structure was. Because I'm from a small town. We didn't need it. And then when we got it, it was like, oh, I have to like do my homework and not talk my way out of it? This is hard. I don't want to do that. But if
study?
I didn't do that, actually study, actually show up to class, not like just throw in your paper like that. And that's different.
Well, when my sons went to St. Sebastian's, I was a little not really concerned, but I was going to how they would react to an all-boys school. They loved an all-boys school. They loved it for a number, because everybody at that school is driven to do well in academics, athletics, and you don't have any distractions. No distractions.
Right.
In the classroom, no distractions. Anywhere else, you're there, you're on campus, you focus on your academics and your athletics, and then you go home. And if there are distractions home, fine, but there aren't any at school. Would you agree with that?
There's fewer. Or it's a different type of distraction.
Right, right.
It's a little bit easier to snap. Yeah. Snap them back in. Besides, they all have phones. It's easier than it used to be.
Everyone's got an alarm clock in their pocket.
Yeah.
So
they told us we wouldn't. They lied to us.
That's true.
You don't walk around with a calculator all day. Well, yeah, I do.
Actually,
I think you'll find I do.
What is your expectation for this season?
Those are always tough because you can't write championship on a whiteboard. It's too nebulous of an idea to be like a realistic goal.
Sure.
So we really just focus on the small building blocks. Are we better this Monday than we were last Monday? And I don't know better at what. Maybe it's we fixed the clear this week. Okay. Something tangible we can all grab onto because it's a long season. And if all that's up there is the kind of the end result, it never comes together as well as it should. So it's tough. It's almost like being a teacher with your kind of like scope and sequence where you have to look at like every individual week as a unit, but also where is it heading? Learned that while at Medfield as well, where you actually have to plan and put all these things in and sometimes pull yourself back where you're like, I can't install 6 offenses. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Let's install 2 and be really good at it. So, yeah, our expectation is just to improve, just to get better. I think we're all thinking would like to take it a round further. Went down to Hingham. Phenomenal team in the round of 8 and fell short. There was no shame in that loss. We lost to a better team. So I think we'd like to go further than that, but long way to go to make it happen.
What are some of the things that you are going to adjust and do, you think maybe do a better job of this year than last year?
Beginning of last year, we couldn't clear the ball worth a damn. So we fixed it, which was nice.
How'd you fix it?
We just changed it up and totally ripped off, you know, what Dover Sherburn's always done, which is just spread everybody out and weave an athletic goalie and find an easy 2-on-1. And it's just easier decisions. We were too crowded. We were making things happen too quickly. And it's high school. So even if we made the right look, it's a kid at a dead sprint over the shoulder. We dropped a lot of them. Can't do that against St. John's Prep.
Yeah. You gotta clear away from the box.
Yeah, just clear away from, I don't know, all those machines they have hunting in the middle of the field. I don't know how you do it, but
yeah.
BC High struggled with that in the champ game, actually, a little bit. That was one of the things, not a total separator, but some of the things. And I remember they messed up a ride, and I just saw Pinchin lose it. Which he doesn't do that often.
Doesn't happen often,
but they messed up a ride in a timeout, and he was just heated. And
I feel like you earned it when you lose it. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that with coaches, though.
I love that you said you needed to work on your ride because I think that's such a huge element, part of the game that sometimes gets overlooked by a number of coaches. And even I think some players might take it lightly. But clearing the ball is one of the most difficult things to do under pressure situations, big games, games tied. But I think it's easier to ride than it is to clear.
Do you really?
I do, because you do have to think, but you really have to be able to see the whole field when you're riding, and you've got to be able to handle the ball, move the upfield, and right. There's more pressure. There's not a lot of pressure if the team clears the ball on you. There's not as much pressure as to clear the ball.
Yeah,
and ultimately, if the other team clears the ball, as long as there's not a fast break situation, okay, they cleared the ball.
I think of it a little differently. Where I feel like clearing is mechanical. If you have, I mean, just an L clear is like mechanical. And riding, for the way that I approach riding, the way I coach riding, is very, it's very important. If you don't lock in our lock ride, we are going to give up a run. And that's bad. A run at our defense. We're going to give that up. We talk in terms of like limiting the top space. We limit that. We lock you off. We don't 10 man. But we usually jump the goalie. I should not be talking about this on the podcast, what we do. But we jump just like, I mean, you don't have to worry about it. But we jump like right at the restraining line, but not in the way that most people do, where we jump from the back. So that defenseman doesn't always come up even. And that's what we say, though, is that's why I say it's mechanical, because our defensemen, if they don't do it in practice or any of the drills, we don't yell that much. But that's one of the things where we're just like, no, you have to be here, and this is why, and we will do the scenario. But if you leave the farthest pass as the only open pass, that's easy if you're riding. If you're clearing, it's not. I think it's getting the two-on-ones is good. But the best way to get the two-on-one is to break the first pass, right?
This is how I look at it. Offense, okay. Defense, football, right?
Yep.
If you're an offensive player, you have an advantage. You go out for a pass, you know where you're going. The defender doesn't know where he's going. When you're riding, you know where you're going most mm-hmm. of the time. When you're clearing, you don't know where those guys are coming from.
Okay.
Okay, so you got to read and react when you're clearing the ball. You don't necessarily have to – you do have to read and react, but not – you know where you're going. You know what I mean? You the offense is – clearing the ball is the riders, and it's the opposite way for the guys clearing the ball.
Right.
We work on it every day. This is how we talk on a clear. These are the things you say. Don't say anything else. Mm-hmm. Don't wave your stick and say here. This isn't little kid ball. Yeah. And we work on the overpass every day. Because that's one of our benchmarks, 100% on the uncontested over.
I don't ever
want to drop one. I don't ever want to see one go, oh, I lost it in the sun.
I mean, college players miss that pass all the time. The crossfield pass from the backside on that defenseman, you always pressure the worst defenseman or leave the worst defenseman.
You can't catch
if you can, if he can't catch, like,
it.
Let him go.
We all know the riding game and clearing game has changed so much in college lacrosse. And it makes the game so much more exciting. I love watching the riding clearing at the college level now. It's so much
fun. It's what separates real nerds of the game from parents.
You just don't know what's going to happen.
Like, here's the 6-on-6. Oh, he did so good. Here's the set there. And I was like, what ride were they running?
It was the only good thing about that, like, Big Ten camera angle where you're that viewing is from true. The moon. Because that's the only time you could actually see the back three or four guys. And it's like... If you're watching Yale or Virginia ride, it's like, I get the pressure part. What are you doing back there so they don't just dump it to an open guy? That's the part I need.
Right,
yeah,
I exactly. can't see that part. Yeah. Can you show me what that is?
Watching it live, it's fantastic. I tell you, I love the shot clock for college lacrosse. Speaking of the shot clock, ISL is adapted to the shot clock, and I personally, and I get your opinion on it, but I think it's a much better game. Do you think the MIA will ever go to a shot clock? Yeah. They're going to have to at some point, right?
I flipped on it, and now I really want it. And I think... They'd like to do it. It's a cost measure. We'd pay for it, and you'd pay for the clock operator. But they all do it for basketball anyway, which is the part schools don't want to talk about.
That's a good point.
But is your team that's 14th out of 14th in the league going to be super happy out of that athletic budget on an 18-game schedule to pay a kid to do this?
Yeah. Your argument is the same argument I used that I didn't think they would do the shot clock in lacrosse for a long time, and why I think they didn't do it, because it is added expense.
Yep.
And it's even at the college level, it's a third-tier sport. Sorry, everyone. It is. We work in it. We know. None of us are rich. Okay? Like, it's not the... Like, you use basketball as an example. That's a great thing if you have that, a person that knows how to do that.
Yep.
But also, do they know when to reset it if it hits a pipe or if a goalie tips it, if it's not going in, like all that kind of stuff. Or if it hits, this is the thing that's happening lately, is the side pipe and they're giving resets. I've watched it 3 times in college already.
Really hitting the outside of it.
Hitting the outside and hearing it. And then the ref does this.
It's got to be robotic for the official. You hear the pipe and he just does it.
I mean, it's not.
I mean, you're not supposed to.
It's not terrible, but it's not good either.
It's because they're not on goal line extended. They should be on goal line extended, right where the shot is hit the side pipe. But they're not on the ball.
If you're talking about college guys being out of place, so don't even worry about the high school guys.
Yeah, no, I'm still
don't
mad.
Tell Darryl Benson.
Oh my gosh,
get myself in trouble again.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Well, let's talk about your personality.
Oh boy,
because I think it's no, I like it. I was telling Jack, I was like, he's kind of a wild man on Twitter. It's pretty great, but like how. I mean, I feel like you've calmed down a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that kind of progress? Like, did you just see, like, no one was really being real with people? Because, like, you're definitely – real is one thing that I would say that you are.
I just don't care. From that angle, I'm just like
– it's the best answer I've ever heard.
We're not doing this to get rich. No. I mean, coaching high school, you get paid, you get your gas money back, hopefully. And what's the worst thing that happens? Oh, all right. This isn't what's paying the bills, so I guess the downside isn't that huge.
Right.
And thankfully, 8 years under John Isaf fixed a lot. Talking about swinging wild, you're 1-2. There's plenty of things that would get tweeted, and my phone would ding a minute later, like, dude, don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
So thanks, John. You fixed a lot of that. Appreciate you, brother. So
well, we all have to grow up at some point, yeah, a little bit, right? And we grow up a little bit every year, and it makes us better. And there's a lot of young coaches. They come out of the gate and they're excited, and they want to do this, and they want to do that. I remember when I took over the high school program in Brookline, I had three rides and three clears and five man ups and four plays. And it's like at the end of the year, I had one clear, one ride. And if we had Twitter then, I would have been getting killed. Piatelli's got these three players and three rides, he's nuts, and now I'd be yelling back at him. That's the feel like, yeah. I don't care. I don't get paid for this.
Well, and I also always go back to the late Bruce Lurch, which is there's always a way to talk about a play, to talk about the kid that made the positive play, yeah, not the one who got beat. Yeah. So that's kind of a big red line,
yes,
where you won't see that going out there, where it's like, wow, I was scouting this game, this goalie stinks.
Right.
It's like, wow, this team shot really well.
Wish that I learned that. A long time ago.
And you know what? You'll appreciate that more when you become a father.
Yeah.
Because I always look at that stuff and I say, if that was my son, I wouldn't want anyone to say that about him. Even I can say that to my son when he comes home and say, hey, you were terrible. That goal you let in, oh my God, that was horrible. But for other people to say it, especially in high school,
no reason to.
If you're getting paid millions of dollars to do something and you make a mistake, sure, throw it at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been barked at more than fairly before.
Yeah.
So you don't bet 1,000. And sometimes you go, oh, yeah, you're right.
Right.
That was a misstep. Apologize.
You're a better man for it.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to say sorry. I'm still waiting for Jack to say it to me someday. But hey, that is actually all the time we have. That actually flew by. I feel like we could have sat here for another 2 hours, maybe like cracked a brewski or something, just talked about it. Not that any of us do that. But keep the podcast going.
Please,
it was a lot of fun.
Coach, nice meeting you. Pleasure.
Yeah, no, nice finally meet in person. Absolutely.
Yes,
and thanks for having me.
Of course.
Great job.
I think I'll still have my job after this.
I hope so.
Yeah. You're fine. If anyone's in trouble, it's me with Coach Ice. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chase the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.